employment program here at The Takeaway. So this week, the G20 meeting begins in London. It's dedicated to shoring up the global financial crisis. Will it be a strategy session, or will it be kind of a ground zero target practice for protesters who are angry at the G20 for the implications of the financial crisis around the world? Joining us now is Dan Price, who's the White House official responsible for the preparation of the last G20 summit, which was held in Washington in November. Certainly the world has changed considerably since then. He's currently a partner at Sydney Austin, a law firm. He joins us from London. Dan Price, what would be your briefing for preparing for the G20 summit now, some months after November? Really, the same urgent issues are on the table. If anything, things have gotten worse.
Good morning, John. I think that's right. When the G20 leaders last gathered in November in Washington, they were facing principally a financial market crisis. Since that time, events have in the global economy taken a turn for the worse. So when G20 leaders gather this time, they'll be addressing not only financial market stabilization, but efforts to put the global economy back on a path to growth and prosperity. It's really shaping up to be quite an important meeting. As you know, the G20 represents approximately 90% of global GDP, and they're going to be tackling these important issues, and they'll need to do so in a cooperative and a coordinated way that does not result in each country simply going it alone or lapsing into protectionism as each country seeks to pull its own economy out of recession.
So do we see sort of tensions within the G20 where Brazil and India are going to try to stake out some territory and maybe the U.S. and China will be on the other side? Or is it the U.S. and the Eurozone? How are the politics going to shape up? And in some ways, it might be bad for them to have too much consensus because the world is really looking for a shakeup here.
Well, I think there is, in fact, an emerging consensus, and I think that's all to the good. We are facing a common set of problems in financial market stabilization and in getting the global economy back on track. And it's going to be important for the G20 all to be pulling in the same direction. And the early signs are that they are, in fact, doing that. There is an emerging consensus around the need to take stock and perhaps additional commitments in respect of domestic stimulus, to stabilize financial markets through shoring up financial institutions and dealing with impaired assets, through carrying forward a regulatory agenda to deal with systemically important institutions, through enhancing the resources of the IMF so that they can deal with the problems in the developing world, and through the importance of pushing back against protectionism so that each country does not pursue beggar-thy-neighbor policies or put up trade barriers as it begins the path of economic recovery.
Well, let's talk about the IMF there you just mentioned. I mean, it seems as though Brazil and India at the very least are going to be pushing for a much greater role in how the IMF and the World Bank operate.
Well, I think that's right, and I think that's appropriate. I think that the G20 leaders will probably reach some agreement on the need to reform governance of the IMF to give the emerging economies a greater voice in the governance of those institutions. Of course, with that greater voice comes greater responsibilities and greater financial commitment.
So explain to me what the role of China is here. I mean, first of all, communist countries, so the extent to which their economy is like the Europeans and the Indians and the Brazilians and the Americans is, you know, it's a little apples and oranges here. Nevertheless, does China vote with the Brazils and the Indias of the world, or do they sort of stick with the Europeans and the Americans, or do they go it alone?
It's not really a question of voting, John. I think if you look back at the November declaration at the Washington summit, you will see China and the other developing countries joining the broad consensus that we will only make our way out of this crisis if we embrace market principles and If we begin the process of regulatory reform in a cooperative fashion where we are not adopting conflicting regulations. So it's, again, it's not a question of countries voting. I think it's a question, as the G20 comes together, of finding consensus, and I think that can be found, and of demonstrating collective political will to right the global economy and make the changes necessary in our financial markets to restart commercial lending and return us to a path of prosperity.
So is there consensus that the dollar is the reserve currency going forward, or do we go with the sort of Chinese suggestion that maybe we need something else?
Certainly we've seen some back and forth in the press about the views of China and Russia about a reserve currency. You know, I would simply note that China has enormous dollar-denominated holdings, and the use of the dollar as a reserve currency will continue to be driven by the fundamentals of the U.S. economy. I believe the U.S. economy will remain a very strong one and an excellent place to invest, and that in the end will determine the future of the dollar as a global reserve currency.
Right, but let's go back to that question. I mean, if the Chinese want to hedge their bets and come up with some sort of alternative, even 5 years out, that would have enormous implications. The markets are incredibly volatile this morning. They're going to be watching not simply the statements, but the punctuation.
Right, and I think you're right. But what we need to keep our eye on is what are countries in fact doing, as opposed to political statements they may be making in the run-up to a leaders' meeting.
So is what comes out of this going to be posturing, or is it going to be more a reflection of what these G20 countries are going to actually be doing?
I would certainly hope the latter, and I'm optimistic that they are on a path to have a very successful summit that will, you know, meet the objectives in those areas I outlined on financial market stabilization, regulatory reform, IMF reform, pushing back on protectionism, and committing to do what's necessary to restart the global economy.
And outside the ceremonies, protesters will be storming the barricades, so to speak. The placards will say it all. The world will be watching. Dan Price, White House official responsible for the preparation of the last G20 summit in Washington in November, talking about the current summit getting underway in London this week. He's currently a partner at Sidley Austin, a law firm. Thank you very much, Dan.
Thanks. Pleasure to join you.
So GM's Rick Wagoner, you may have noted from our newscast, is riding off into the sunset. Here's your takeaway.
The feeling was that, as the White House officials say, they needed a clean sheet, but you might state it more simply that somebody's head had to roll.
That's somebody, of course, Rick Wagoner. That's Cheryl Gay Stolberg, the White House correspondent from our partner, the New York Times. We're asking you, if you were in Rick Wagoner's shoes, how would you save GM? The job appears to be open. What would you invest in? What would you shutter? Would you even want the job to begin with? Give us your take at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. We also are setting up for the G20 summit. You heard a briefing there from Dan Price. You might want to podcast that interview. Take our podcast to go. You can subscribe at thetakeaway.org. Or on iTunes. What would you put on a placard if you were in the crowds of demonstrators anticipating the G20 summit to address this current financial crisis? Give us your placard at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. I'm John Huckenberry. This is The Takeaway.